What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Gift of Gaming podcast. It's the start of March, and what that means is we've got February news to cover. Everything from Pokemon Day, a state of play, and Warner Brothers closing down some studios. That and more, it's all here on the Gift of Gaming podcast. What's up, everybody? It's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by the Anchor Team Supreme, the artist who's still known as Mr. Xbox Games Pass himself. I almost went backwards.
You were looking at me. Yeah. I'm so confused.
I just thought I messed up what you guys said. It's Mr. Xbox Games Pass himself, Luke Maycock. Luke, hi.
Hey, how's it going, Darren?
And it's the console-hating, PC-playing, lore-seeking, full-time Canadian himself, Christopher Robbins.
Yo,
you think you're going to go in a part-time Canadian sometime soon? Or you're going to stick out being a full-time Canadian?
I mean, I don't make the titles. That's all this guy. Apparently, I still hate consoles, too, so.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Word on the street is, Chris. Yeah. Gentlemen, it's nice to have you here. February, as I found out, was a quiet month for gaming news right up until the end, where a few different bits and pieces happened. But I just want to ask, Luke, how was your February from a gaming perspective?
Good, yeah, because I'm back on my Game Pass BS. So good. I played Firewatch last night, like the whole game, which was really nice.
Fuck, I forgot about that. I know. Game. Yeah, I always meant to play it. It's just walking and talking, though, isn't it?
It's a walking sim. Yeah. It's been on my list for donkey's years, and I did a thing when I canceled my Game Pass last year, where all the games that I still wanted to play on Game Pass, I kept installed on my console, as if to be like, hey, if I got Game Pass again, I could just load these up. I don't even have to install them. And Firewatch was one of them. And I was just sitting around last night, and I was in a bit of a mood for, you know, something kind of somber, nice, slow, beautiful, walking sim. And it was great. It was great. It wasn't not a 10 out of 10 or anything, but fun.
It was pretty groundbreaking at the time, though. Like, we weren't used to getting games like that, I think. Sure. I might be making shit up.
I'm just looking at it now. It's like 9.3 out of 10, yeah. 9 out of 10.
Yeah. People weren't used to that kind of experience. It was just like, oh, that was just relaxing.
It was kind of at the genesis of the walking sim genre. So I think it came out before Gone Home.
Strand type game, you say?
No, before... Before
more of a journey
Kojima.
Type of,
before Kojima made some weird other genre. No, like a walking sim, like I think Oberdin would be considered one. Gone Home is one. Just walking around, like unveiling parts of the story, and there's not really any action or no reaction speeds required, just like some dialogue, some really good dialogue. The voice acting was 10 out of 10. Like, that's sold the whole story. And it was good. Yeah, it's just been on my list a long time. Other than that, I've actually been playing loads of Halo Infinite.
On that bus.
I've been
nice.
Loving it. It's so fun, man.
Online or campaign?
Online.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah, it's so fun. It's so fun. That's been it for me.
Chris, how about you?
POE. Nothing but Path of Exile.
Really?
The first one.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, you got back to
the first
one.
Yeah, because I was playing, I love the second one, but it's still in early access, and they're missing a lot of the classes, and the end game content isn't quite there. And I never gave the first Path of Exile its time, so I went back. They released it's a 1 month event going on where in Path of Exile you have these like base classes, right? And then later on in the game you ascend into like a subclass, which really kind of defines your core character mechanics. They scrapped them all and they just threw in 19 new ones that never made it through, like, you know, the
testing or whatever.
Yeah, never made it off the chopping block. And they're like, look at these wacky ideas. So I'm playing like a surf caster. It's about like fishing and shit like that. It's super
I like the sound
weird.
Of that. Yeah.
It's fucking wacky.
Because you're a man who enjoys a fishing sim in any game, right?
There's no fishing. It's just like it's fishing themed, I suppose. he gets bonus cast speed if he's equipped with a fishing rod and like.
Nice.
It's just all sorts of weird shit and like all sorts of like chill effects and like ice and storm. And
that's surely the same studio, is it, as POE 2?
Yeah, definitely.
It's in New Zealand.
Grinding Gear Games. New Zealand. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm super excited for Path of Exile 2, though. It's such a good game.
You
it's everything that Diablo should have evolved into after Diablo 2. Because I played a lot of 3, but like 3 was just like, this isn't Diablo. Like, there's something weird and off about this. But Path of Exile seems like the natural progression off of Diablo 2.
So. Nice.
Cool.
I can confirm Luke Grindiger Games, New Zealand video game company.
Yeah.
So I just fact check as we go.
which is awesome.
Yeah, it's a, yeah, to not make a big such yeah. a popular thing.
Free games too. It's they're purely funded on microtransactions, purely like cosmetic and like extra like stash space and stuff.
That's cool. Did you have to pay to play the beta, or at least on console?
So you did have to pay. I think it was €30 to get into the beta. You had to buy the premium edition, but that also includes the €30 worth of
whatever
in-game
DLC
in-game currency. So which you tech you if you want to sweat the game out, you pretty much need it for the extra like stash tabs.
Okay.
Like to store all like because you just get not, like it's fucking crazy how much shit you get.
That's a cool way to do it. I like that as a model.
Yeah.
Because you know up front, well, as a consumer, you know what you're signing up for, and you know it's if you just waited a bit longer, it would be a free to play game.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a good way to like really because it's a kind of a Giga Brain game. Like you open up the skill tree, and that like most people just quit it the moment they look at that because it's very overwhelming.
Yeah.
But it's a free game, so you kind of like, you have to rope them in somehow, right? Then that is like you know, the price point. So they'll try it, and if they do end up really liking it, then they'll
sink a few baba in. Yeah.
Yeah,
nice.
Very cool.
And answer your question, Luke. I've spent my February with a bit of Civilization 7.
Oh yeah.
I was dabbling with a bit of Tekken 8 in between.
Oh nice. I'm getting the urge for Tekken 8 specifically.
I mean, it's just because I went back just to play a bit of the arcades with it because I hadn't. Well, I played maybe I finished the story. Did a good bit of online. I think I'm like 20 hours total into Tekken, but it's just a nice one to jump back into. So I was doing a few online game with Law. My win ratio was like 70-odd%, which is pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. Jeez. But Law, he's the only one I play as online. I'm too nervous to try anybody
else.
Well,
that's how fighting games work online. You have a main, and that's what you do.
Yeah. So did a bit of that. Civilization 7 has been fantastic, but... It has been fantastic.
I've been hearing bad... Well, yeah, bad things.
So... Interesting.
The eras, something about the eras, like...
I love it. So the interesting thing about it is I struggled a lot to finish a game of Civilization VII because for me, the most exciting part of a game of Civ was the first, like, 100 turns. And the great thing about the ages, you got the three ages, the Antiquity Age, the Exploration Age, and then the Modern. And the Antiquity and Exploration are class. The Antiquity is classically, you know, discovering the map, finding your wonders, building your cities, and getting some settlements down. And then you go through the entire age, and then when you hit the... You can't get to a certain point in the technology trees or the civics trees, so you don't actually get to learn how to go out to deep sea boating until you hit the exploration age. It unlocks more items on the tech tree and stuff. So I remember the first game I played, which I played through at the end and got like a culture win. It was really, really cool because when it came to the age of exploration, it resets you almost. So like lots of what you were going
on. That's what I heard, and people hate that.
No, I think it's great because it pretty much gives you almost like a brand new 100 turns. Like it has that feeling.
But isn't that just like loading up another game? Like
no, because I think it's interesting in that like I've like basically by the time I got to the end of my Antiquity Age in the first game that I played, I had uncovered the entire continent that I was on. So I knew the civs that I was against, I knew what the lay of the map was, and I just had like scouts and boats ready to go explore the ocean. Silly thing, because it kind of randomizes your troops a little bit. It'll put it when it goes into the age of exploration, it will essentially like delete your troops unless you've got them mapped into like an army commander, and then other than that, it'll put a random troop of that age into your cities to protect them, into the capitals or whatever. But what was cool was at the moment I came into that, I straight away was trying to learn the sieves to go explore. So the boats can go into deep water now, but it damages them while they're in deep water, so you've got to find shallow water soon. Like it's like a whole like send this boat out and know it's quite like dangerous to go and find the new world. Okay. When you get to the new world, then trading is really important because you have to get like you have to trade with like, these new world because like continents don't share the same resources for the most part.
Oh, that's cool. I like
so
that,
when you get to it, it's like, oh, look at these spices, or whatever. So it has that kind of vibe to it. But it is a whole beginning again, almost in a way, for another like you know 50-100 odd turns. Then you get to the modern age, and the modern age I think for me still felt like the modern age in Civ 6, which is my least favorite age. Just the whole at that stage, I'm kind of I wouldn't say I'm tired, but it's like. It's like I've got like fucking 12 cities and a turn takes me longer than it should when you're producing things. Like things get a little bit out of hand. But no, I, you know, it's one of those things I learned from people talking about Civ 7 before I got it. I was almost regretting the decision based on the reviews. Lots of it was negative. And the moment I picked up the game, I was like, these reviews are trash. In my opinion, I think what people were saying was trashy. I think it's like people expected an updated Civ 6. And I was like, what's the point? You know, like
that's the moment Civ 7 got announced. I was like, what is the point? Like Civ 6 is Like, how are you going to improve on that? So I guess you do have to change the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think, like I said, I don't think they hit it. Like, the game still has lots of issues. One of the big problems people had was the UI, which is in a real state. Like, it's really hard to see what you're navigating across. You can't look at certain things on menus that you should be able to look at to help you make decisions. So the UI still sucks a little bit. But I think we're going to do, hopefully, if you do pick it up soon, Chris, we can do an episode on it if you ever go down that road.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I'd rather go back to, like, 5 or something.
Try it again. Yeah, no, but listen, it's been great, and it's interesting. Because at the end of February, I got onto Monster Hunter, of course, came out on the very last day, and I've played a lot of that since. But there was lots of kind of critical. I didn't read the reviews until the Friday when the game came out, and I played like an hour or two, and then I was sitting down having like a bit of lunch and a coffee, and I scrolled through a few reviews, being like, oh, well, now that I play, like, what do people think? And people are like, God, the game's too easy. Performance is awful, I think, for the most part. I'm just incredibly lucky that I'm playing it on a pro, which no issues performance-wise for me.
But does that make... Oh, God. I feel like there's a comment about the PS5 being obsolete here, but...
Well, I mean, but essentially, like, I mean, I don't agree with the... Like, Dave, unfortunately, some of the stuff that's coming out since is that, like, they're like, no, we've developed it as much as it will go. Like, there's no, like... improvements at this point on, which you, you just have to have the right tech. Like the game will, like, obviously have expansions and things like that, but I think from a performance perspective, I think they said that they actually, like, it's polished.
I think that's a bit of, you know, lying, because based on the reviews I read on Steam, which are great either, a lot of optimization issues, but a lot of people, like, broke it down and saw what's actually running under the hood, and apparently this one shipped with 2 anti-tamper softwares, is crazy performance hitting. So if I don't know if that ends up on consoles, I imagine it does, and like that is probably causing the issues.
What's interesting about it, because I know people, and especially me in the latter years, are big fans of like your frame rates and you're trying to get the best of both worlds in terms of fidelity and resolution and everything. But like, we had a LAN party the other day, like the day after Monster Hunter Day, we celebrated myself, Craig, Kev, who's back from New Zealand now, which is great, and then Niall. And they were all playing on PS5s. So I could see the screens in front of me, and I thought it looked like clean. I know for those people who really want the things looking the absolute best, and it is a PS5 game, it's a next gen, you know, in theory, so it should look better. Character models and monsters look better than world. The environment does not. The environment's like hazy, it's a bit patchy in places, and I think from my playing it, I think they've put a lot into, like, the environments change as you play, so it can be like everything's really, they call it the fallow and the plenty, so like things look real shit for a while, then there's a big storm and everything looks great, and that seems to have eaten a lot of, I guess, maybe time or resources they would have put into maybe just making one of them just look really, really good. They've got these for each level or map, they've got these 3 periods, and they have to kind of all gel in a certain way. So I don't know if that's causing them problems, but like, people were complaining that it was too easy. People were complaining that, like, you know, it's going to be... I, again, like with Civ 7, I'm like, I understand people's performance complaints, but for me, it's not enough that I'd ever say this is a trash game at all. I think it runs as well as World. And then it's so much fun. Classic Monster Hunter.
Performance... complaints, like, just being a PC player, I expect them. Like, that's just the reality of PC gaming, unfortunately. I'm not too concerned about that, but the fact that you just said, Capcom has said, like, we've done all we can, like, so, that sounds pretty fucking concerning.
Yeah, I'd say so. So I don't know if, like, because there's like certain updates that they're bringing like a community, like a hub place area into the game in April. I don't know, when you do like an Iceborne or a Sunbreak update as a DLC, does that is that an improvement? I don't know if you can do that, if that works like that. I'm not quite sure. I'm not in that world. But like, for me, I'm playing it, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't look as good as I'd like the next gen Monster Hunter to look, but it still looks great for what it is, and it's a classic Monster Hunter game. So
it's getting a 90 on Metacritic.
The reviews, Steam seems to have the real negative thing, and I think that's all performance stuff.
Yep.
Because you have to have a really high-end PC to play this in any...
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, you kind of have to take some of the Steam reviews with a grain of salt, because, like, they playing on a computer they might have built, like, fucking 7 years ago, and you're like, why doesn't this new game work on my ancient tech? It's just like, come on, man, get your shit together. But I did read some comments, and, like, they were stating their GPUs, and, like...
It's a real mixed bag.
Saying they weren't getting like 60 frames on that like specific GPU model that they mentioned, I was just kind of like, ooh, that doesn't sound great.
Yeah. And like, I mean, on the Pro, I'm getting 60 frames when I go into, what is that? That's fidelity, right? Resolution? fidelity, resolution, graphics, fidelity.
Graphics is just like how things look. The frames is
a frame rate.
Frames so is performance.
I'm playing it on a balanced thing in terms of graphics and then higher frame rate, and I'm getting 60 frames smooth as. Doesn't seem to have any issues in the Pro, which is great. So I understand, like, I'm very lucky that I have that and there's no problems with it. So I understand people's complaints, but like, it should be able to play on the PS5. That's what the majority of people have.
Yeah.
So, but apart from that, great game. Having a lot of fun. Cool. We'll continue to have a lot of fun. I'm like, I'd say 12 or 13 hours into it at this stage. Probably more by the time this goes live, I'm sure. Like, you know. But yeah, classic Monster Hunter, having a great time. But gentlemen, we're not here to talk about Monster Hunter. We're here to talk about the February news that isn't Monster Hunter.
Yeah, that's kind of news.
It's, yeah. It's up there.
It's recent. Fresh and relevant. Yeah.
So we'll go into our first item of the day, which was that we had Pokemon Day 2025, which is February 27th, for those who didn't know. February 27th was the day that Pokemon Red and Green was released in Japan.
Okay.
This is coming from Geek Ireland by Olivia Fahey, and this is from the 28th of February. So Pokemon Day brought fans on the jam-packed Pokemon Presents, hosted by Sunkayu Isahara, president and CEO of the Pokemon Company. Fans were treated to a slew of exciting updates across the entire franchise, from video games and trading cards to mobile apps and even an award-nominated Netflix series. With so many reels to talk about, it's easy to miss some of them, so here's everything you need to know from the latest Pokemon Showcase. Now, I'm only going to go down a few of these because it got into like real obscure Pokemon stuff that I don't think is probably worth our time, but I'll go through a couple of these that might be interesting to us. We got Pokemon Legends ZA, a new adventure in Lumiose City. The upcoming Pokemon Legends ZA is shaping up to be something special, offering a fresh take on the bustling streets of Lumiose City. Players will begin their journey with Chikorita, Tipig, or Totodile as their partner Pokemon, embarking on an urban adventure in Mr. City's redevelopment.
Say that again?
Chikorita, Tipig? Or Totodile.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, silver starters, yeah. Silver and gold starters, but Tepic instead of Cyndaquil.
Yeah, okay.
The trailer teases new characters, familiar faces, and of course the return of Mega Evolution. I don't know if you guys saw this trailer, but it doesn't... I'm always just looking for that like next generation Pokemon game that's a bit darker and stuff like that. It looks exactly as I kind of expected it to look. It's going to be out on the Switch. Looks a bit ropey. It's in a city that's being redeveloped to make it kind of like harmony for people and Pokemon. So some of the areas, which are urban areas, have been like cordoned off and let to like, I suppose, have nature take them back over. And that's where you go in and fight wild Pokemon. But it's the same thing that they've kind of gotten into where you don't really have to fight a lot of the wild Pokemon. You just throw a Pokeball at them while you're running around and you can capture them. Some of them are a little bit more tricky and you have to get your Pokemon out to fight. The fighting has changed. You and your Pokemon move around while there's a fight happening to avoid certain moves and stuff like that.
Wasn't that in Legends?
No, the movement didn't matter in Legends Arceus. The Pokemon didn't move around, I don't think. I think you threw out your Pokeball and they just fought kind of linearly. But you could move around them in a 3D space. Whereas in this one, I think it's like in the cartoon where the Pokemon actually like dodge to the side and run around each other.
Oh, that sounds dope, man. Yeah. I've been waiting for something like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, I looked at it and I was like...
Get a fucking champ and just beat the everything. Oh my God. Sounds amazing.
A party of six Machamps for Chris.
Beat up the trainer and just go through the game as Machamp.
As the trainer hostage back at the house,
wearing a baseball cap, pretending to be a trainer with six arms.
We also got Pokemon Champions, the ultimate battling experience. A new title for the franchise, Pokemon Champions is aiming to bring together everything fans love about Pokemon battles. With deep strategic gameplay, fresh mechanics, and cross-platform support between the Nintendo Switch and mobile devices, this could be a game changer, especially considering how players can even transfer Pokemon from Pokemon Home to create their ultimate battle team. And I think it's Pokemon Home and Pokemon Go. You can use any Pokemon that you've caught through those things. It's like a brand new Pokemon Stadium, I guess.
Yeah.
Just online.
I think they're kind of cashing in on the how much momentum there is behind the pro scene in Pokemon.
Yeah, and they're all using that online thing.
Emulator thingy. And it looks great. Like, it looks really good, but Pokemon Company has to step in.
The success of this is going to be the price point. Because if it's just a battler, they can't be charging full price for it.
No, hopefully not. We then move on to Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, new events and shiny encounters. The celebrations extend into Pokemon Scarlet and Violet with a host of in-game events. A special mystery gift password unlocks an exclusive Rotom phone case, while mass outbreaks of red, green, and blue Pokemon increase the odds of encountering shiny Pokemon. I was watching this, and I thought it was quite funny that... I guess there is people who are big into this, but it had a snapshot of... your character with their phone, which I guess is how you either contact people or move around or call things, whatever else. But it's just a case for that phone as the new event. And I was like, huh. I'm sure so some people are getting excited about this, but not me. We also have Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket. A new expansion arrives for TCG fans. The Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket is rolling out the Triumphant Light Booster Pack on February 28th. Also, the Genetic Apex expansion returns, offering booster packs with guaranteed high rarity cards. And if you're feeling competitive, ranked matches is debut at the end of March. I was always considering getting the London Pokemon Trading Card
supposed
Game.
Supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a buddy trying to convince me to play it.
I might give that a look. Then we've got Pokemon Concierge, Netflix stop motion series expands.
Nice.
A Netflix stop motion series, Pokemon Concierge, has earned multiple award nominations, and Pokemon Day confirmed that a second season is in production. Pokemon Day gave fans a sneak peek at early motion test footage, which showcased some new Pokemon joining Hyrule and Psyduck at the Pokemon Resort.
So same characters, okay.
Yeah, it's, I think it's just more Pokemon coming into the resort to check it out. But the little sneak peek they gave looked pretty cute. And then we go to Pokemon Go, Chris. Unova Tour and Legendary Encounters. Pokemon Go Unova Global kicks off on March 1st, bringing back Kyurem, White Kyurem, and even a chance to encounter Victini and Shiny Meloetta. And later on March 4th, Kubfu and an Urshifu make their in-game debut. I don't know who any fucking Pokemon
are. You guys don't know. You love Urshifu. You get yourself an Urshifu, boy. Get a little Kubfu, train him up into an Urshifu. You love that shit.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Luke, because I have no idea who the fuck these Pokemon are.
You guys are lame. You got to get up on your Pokemon shit.
I'm about like 400 behind, I'd say, where I need to
be. You go to the island, you do the karate dojo and get yourself an Urshifu. That's fire, man.
Is this real?
He's just saying words to me.
I don't know if you're just making shit up or not.
You guys are lame. You got to catch up.
Talking about karate dojos makes me think you're not actually... Bullshit.
Telling the truth, yeah. I'm going to read out the other things that were announced, and if you want any information about them, just say so. But there's a lot of kind of like, I guess, like.
Did you play the Pokemon Legends?
Legends Arceus?
Yeah.
No, I haven't finished it. I haven't.
Oh, okay, but you have played it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. I play Pokemon Go. I play Arceus. I think the last mainline one I got was Sword and Shield. I think
the last one I played too. Violet and Scarlet looked dog.
When they announced they're bringing out an update to get the frame rate up to 24 frames a second, I'm in. But until then, it's a hard pass.
Yeah. We got Pokemon Masters EX, a new Master Sync pairs. We got Pokemon Unite, new fighters and features. Pokemon Sleep.
Pokemon Unite, I think that was a bit slept on by a lot of people. That was a fun fucking MOBA.
Oh, wait, was Unite the MOBA?
That was the MOBA. Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
That looks great. Yeah,
well, now a new mode called First to 500 challenges players to rack up 500 points first for victory, and a new AOS technology system grants special effects as you score. If that means anything to either of you, good stuff. We got Pokemon Sleep, Darkrai and Cresselia clash, Pokemon Cafe remix, sweet surprises await.
Holy fuck, how big is this list?
So, and this is the last one, Pokemon series expands language support. So now for Spanish speaking fans, it'll now be localized in Latin American Spanish. So that was all the list. It got progressively less known for me as I was reading. I was watching the thing, and I had to wait till the end to get ZA, but they were like putting on this Pokemon Cafe remix. I was like, the fuck is this? But it's been going for a long time, apparently. So I'm like, good for them. Guys, Pokemon. Where do you feel? Where do you feel it is at the minute?
You gotta love it. God damn.
I don't know. Given the success of Pal World, I don't think they're trying hard enough yet.
They got to step up.
Yeah.
If they release a game just called Pokemon Guns Edition, she would go fire.
We know where we're going with that one, yeah. So if you've got nothing else to say on Pokemon, we'll move over to our next story.
I kind of want to ask, was there any hint, was there a release date for ZA?
No, 2025, I think, was all they said, but there's no release window, I don't think.
Because what I was thinking is, like, if that drops on Switch 2 and is good,
it to me, no.
Oh, it can help the console.
No, it'll be a Switch 1 release, I'd say. Yeah. It looks rough as well.
It'll have to come out on the Switch 1, but if it also comes out on the Switch 2, that'll be...
Maybe, but I think, if it does... I'd be very disappointed playing what I saw in that trailer on the Switch 2. Like I said, it just graphically, I'm like, guys, you have so fucking much money in the bank. Why can't you expand this to be... And I guess, like, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I feel like they're taking advantage of people at this stage.
Too busy writing weird Cyndaquil erotica.
I was going to go pants, but yeah, it's something for erotic. Okay.
Yeah, remember that leak?
Yeah, the leak. Like, that was weird. Chris, we're going to go into a little bit more of a technical story. You put this up in the chat about AMD.
Oh, the GPUs. Yeah.
This is exciting. I'll read out the intro to that. It got real wordy afterwards, so I might get you to kind of just let me and Luke probably knows.
Oh, even some of the wordy ones, they start talking about like the flops and the tops and the blah, blah, blah.
I'm already gone.
I don't get it that well.
Well, this is coming from Sean Hollister at The Verge. AMD's answer to NVIDIA's RTX 50 series GPUs is arriving next week, and its new graphics cards are aggressively priced against NVIDIA's $749 GeForce RTX 5070 Ti and $549 RTX 5070. The AMD Radeon RX 9070 and 9070 XT ship on March 6th for $459 and $599 respectively, one day after the RTX 5070 arrives.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Holy shit. I thought the NVIDIA stuff was cheap. That's nuts. Yeah. Sorry, Darren.
No, listen. This is great. I'm going to mean something to somebody. AMD says they both offer 4K gaming at a 1440p price, although it's making some unusual comparisons to do so. According to AMD, the 9070 XT is 51% faster on average than a four-year-old RX 6900 XT at 4K and max settings, and 26% faster than a four-year-old RTX 3090 at the same settings, cards that filled a pricey niche two generations ago. While leaks have suggested the pricing of AMD's 9070 could start at $649, AMD surprised everyone today with suggested retail prices at $549 for this card, putting it head-to-head with NVIDIA's RTX 5070. The $599 9700 XT could even challenge NVIDIA's $749 pricing for its RTX 5070 Ti, as long as AMD has managed to deliver performance that can challenge both of these RTX 50 series cards. We won't know the full answer until reviews for the AMD cards appear next week, as well as reviews for NVIDIA's RTX 5070. AMD is dropping some performance hints about where its 9070 series cards might fit in, though. It says the RX 9700 XT should be just behind the 5070 Ti performance without ray tracing enabled. If accurate, that could put a lot of pressure on NVIDIA's $750 pricing if AMD has good retail stock of its $600 GPU.
Bigger issues with the NVIDIA than just the pricing is those cards just like don't work right now.
Oh shit, they're failing.
A good line of them are literally catching fire. Oh, no. Yeah, just like a bunch of them shipped without a certain part. So
that
just
regulates heat?
No, this is a different issue. Yes. So some of them do catch fire. That's an issue. A bunch of them shipped without this part that just doesn't allow it to get the performance that it's capable of. Right. And this isn't even like something that you can patch in with like drivers and stuff. It's literally
a physical
hardware issues. Yeah. And they're like, there's a bunch of memes where just like, I think it's a Simpsons meme where he's kind of like looking at the new, like the 5070s or whatever. He's getting all shifty eyes and he just rips off the sticker and it just says like 4070 under it. And it, like, they are not doing well. So the other funny joke that has always kind of been around is AMD never misses to miss an opportunity. And they always like, they've always been kind of like in NVIDIA's shadow, but they just fucking capitalize on NVIDIA's, like when NVIDIA fails,
they're right there.
They're in there to like, oh man. And this might be it for them. Like they've always been behind in GPUs, even though I'm an AMD fanboy, but that's just because I like Linux and their drivers are open source. So anyways, jargon you guys don't need to know about. So I think this is a great jump for at least my favorite GPUs, and with those price points, it's just great for PC gaming. I'm fucking stoked.
Actually insane for PC gaming.
Yeah.
And so, Luke, you seemed pretty shocked at the price when I was reading it. That is an insanely cheap price for something that's the next generation.
Throwing him in a Happy Meal, like that's nothing. Like it's so casually cheap. Because like graphics cards, I mean, it's hard to compare them historically because we basically had a chip shortage for the whole beginning of the Series X and PS5 generation. So during that time, your bog standard graphics card costs like a couple of grand, like $2,000 or something. Crazy. And you're talking about a new line, like the next gen of graphics cards costing like $500.
Yeah.
That's nuts. And that
I paid over $1,000 for mine because it was during the, it wasn't even the, it was a combination of the short, well, sorry, the shortage was because of crypto mining, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So just yeah.
The general.
So I had to pay fucking bullshit scalper prices.
Oh shit. So people had bought them by the truckload to mine cryptocurrency with them.
That's how that's how cryptocurrency gets mined, is like solving math problems basically is how.
There's a world out there that I will never understand.
But to do that really fast, you need to like daisy chain a bunch of GPUs. And there was a time, once upon a time, when crypto was starting off, that was viable for your average consumer to do. But now it's gotten to a stage where it's scaled so big and they need so much processing power to do those equations that the return is really poor if you don't just buy like thousands of graphics cards and build supercomputers out of them.
Yeah.
So that drove the prices way through the roof just for stuff like gaming or whatever. But now...
It affected consoles and shit too, just because... Oh,
that's why PS5 shortage stocks were so poor.
Yeah.
That's exactly why. And for it to get to a stage now where, you know, Nvidia are stepping up and being like, $500-$700 next gen.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is... Because the GPU companies, they kind of saw us still buying those graphics cards, which kind of like we're shooting ourselves in the foot with that, I thought. And it was like, well, they will pay this, so why don't we keep charging this? But like to AMD to come out, and they've historically always been the cheaper company, to like come out swinging like this and be like, by the way, guys, we're still the fucking cheap company.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
Yes. And if next week those reviews come in and they're positive and they work and they return the numbers that they're hoping for, they don't set shit on fire.
That would be helpful. Yeah.
It's going to be really exciting. Like, cause we kind of joke about on our big three episode, we kind of joke about that. Like there'll be a PC corner next year or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, but PC, like, I mean, there already should be. PC is the biggest platform.
PC is the biggest platform, but you're talking about like
League of Legends players and shit like that, unfortunately. Like,
sure. But it's kind of always been in a position, like the reason consoles are viable is because it's like an everything in the one box and runs all the games. That's the selling point. You know, there's no setup or any of that. If it gets to a stage now where like the GPUs become so cheap that you're, you know, there's going to be companies that make those pre-made builds that sell them for a huge markup. But if this starts to drive prices down over the next couple of years, you could be like, it could just be all PC gaming is the future. Like it really could be.
There's always going to be the issue with PC gaming where the entry fee is always going to be like, that's where most of the investment comes in. Cause you like when you first start out, there's a lot of shit you have to buy, like your power supply, your case, and just like other things that technically you'll probably never have to buy again. You'll only have to upgrade like your CPU every now and then, your GPU a bit more regularly. But it's the initial buy-in that drives a lot of people away. So we'll still have that issue.
So I could become a PC gamer?
No, Darren, you'll never be a PC gamer.
I mean, that's up to you. Like,
you'll never make that joke.
It is also like a different... I mean, you could set up a PC to like... you know, just sit there on beside your TV so you can chill out on your couch. But like PC gaming is generally like you're at a desk. And keyboard and mouse. So it is different, a very different experience. So, different and vibe. If you're not into that, then you're not into that. Nothing's going to change about it.
Yeah, that's fair. We've got two stories. I was going to go through the State of Play announcements and stuff like that now and then go into our final story afterwards. But I'm just looking at time and I just probably want to give this next story a good bit of time. So I'm going to jump to the story from Warner Brothers. And if we've got time at the end, we'll take a look at that State of Play. But here we go. Warner Brothers Games cancels Wonder Woman and closes three studios. This is coming from Rebecca Valentine at IGN. Warner Brothers is cancelling its planned Wonder Woman game and shutting down three studios, Monolith Productions, Player First Games, and WB San Diego, according to Bloomberg reporter Jason Schreier. Schreier broke the news on Blue Sky today, followed by the release of a full report on Bloomberg shortly after Schreier's post. WB confirmed the shutdowns to Kotaku in a statement. This is on the 26th of February, by the way, just in case people think it's happened today when you're listening to this. So the statement from WB reads as follows. We have had to make some very difficult decisions to structure our development studios and investments around building the best games possible with our key franchises, Harry Potter, Mortal Kombat, DC, and Game of Thrones. After careful consideration, we are closing three of our development studios, Monolith Productions, Player First Games, and Warner Brothers Games San Diego. This is a strategic change in direction, not a reflection of these teams or the talent that consists within them. The development of Monolith's Wonder Woman video game will not move forward. Our hope is to give players and the fans the highest quality experience possible for the iconic character, and unfortunately this is no longer possible within our strategic priorities. This is another tough decision as we recognize Monolith's storied history of developing epic fan experiences through amazing games. We greatly admire the passion of the three teams and thank every employee for their contributions. As difficult as today is, we remain focused and excited about getting back to producing high quality games for our passionate fans and developed by our world-class studios, getting our games business back to profitability and growth in 2025 and beyond. Earlier this year, another Bloomberg report suggested Wonder Woman was in trouble after rebooting and switching directors in early 2024. This came amid larger struggles to the company's gaming division, including layoffs at Rocksteady, the lukewarm reception to Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, and the shutdown.
Lukewarm?
Yeah, yeah. And the shutdown of multiverses. Shit. And even more recently, W Games has appeared to undergo a restructuring of sorts as longtime games head David Haddad announced his departure from the company and rumors circulated that the division might be sold off. Specifically, this move represents a blow to WB's DC Universe connected gaming efforts. Notably, just yesterday, James Gunn and Peter Safran said in a presentation that it would be, quote, a couple of years before the first DC Universe video game. With this closure, the games industry loses three incredibly storied studios. Monolith Productions, which had been working on Wonder Woman, was founded in 1994 and acquired by WB in 2004. It's best known for Middle-Earth Shadows of Mordor and its sequel Shadow of War, the former of which pioneered the lauded Nemesis system that WB successfully patented in 2021. Playfirst Games, a newer studio established in 2019, was responsible for Multiverses. This game was well received critically and saw launch success, but underperformed relative to WB's expectations. WB San Diego, similarly, is a newer studio established in 2019 with a focus on mobile free-to-play games. The shutdowns continue a trend of going back roughly 3 years of increasing games industry layoffs, project cancellations, and studio closures. In 2023 alone, it's estimated that over 10,000 game developers were laid off. The number shot up to over 14,000 in 2024, and while 2025 has seen numerous closures, the exact number of impacted individuals is hazier due to fewer companies reporting these layoffs and shutdowns or specific numbers affected. That's a pity, guys.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Monolith.
And it's all due to just greedy business decisions. It's like I have business executives have no place calling the shots on like how to develop games.
No.
They just be like, they have... No, like they hear about like battle passes and just like, oh, people are buying skins or paying this much money for skins and games. It's just like, okay, let's
that has to be the focus.
Turn out the most shit possible. And of course, people aren't going to like your games if you're so aggressive like that and just focus on that instead of, you know, a good fucking game.
I always use Cyberpunk as the example in my own head when I think about the kind of like terrible decisions being made and that game being released the way it was when we didn't need it right there and then. We could have waited an extra couple of months to get the game.
Oh, people were getting kind of angry.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of what's going to affect your reputation more, and yeah. from a personal perspective, had CD Projekt Red said, hey, look, we've got to delay Cyberpunk for another like 6 months to a year, I'd be like, ugh, what a pain in the ass. Or they could do what they did, which is release the game in the state that it was, and I picked it up and I was like, this is a whole heap of fire and I want nothing to do with this or this company anymore. Yeah. Just as you're right, it just doesn't, they shouldn't be making those decisions. And it's such a pity. It's like I don't, there's a list of, I think, things that they were looking at. The Wonder Woman game was, from what I understand, well-developed and looked like gorgeous, supposedly.
Yeah,
at
and
the
it
stage
was it was bringing back the Nemesis system.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. They were putting the Nemesis system back into a game. It was supposed to be in Wonder Woman.
How does that work in Wonder Woman?
So I guess they probably would have had like that, just certain types of enemies that would have come back.
And he comes back stronger. And
yeah.
Like,
I'm sure they probably, whatever group they would have been fighting, I'm sure probably would have had something in the Wonder Woman lore that could have fit into that. The Nemesis system, we'll talk about more on the post show. I've got an article about that one that we can discuss later because it's an interesting one now that Monolith Studios is closed. But considering like that's the thing that makes me so sad. Great that you're making a Wonder Woman game. DC, Marvel, you know, movies are still, they're still, whether they're good or they're bad, they're still throwing them out. But the idea that you'd focus on something like that instead of making another like Shadow of Mordor type game, which was like that's your bread and butter.
Crazy.
Those are successful.
Yeah. And it was another one of these like huge fumble was when it first came out in beta, Multiverses won Game of the Year. It was a good fucking game. And then they kind of like sunset, shut it down for a bit. And they're like, it's coming back later. It's coming back better. It's coming back finished. And it was just when it finally released, I was super excited. I was there day one. It was trash, man, and it was the most aggressive
microtransactions
I've ever seen in a game. They literally threw everything in there. There was even like the whole mobile thing. You know how you have to purchase energy to play more?
Yeah.
Like there was... Oh, that was shit. In the game. I was like, yeah. Because there was these little like quests you could do in order to get like on this little map thing.
So just to play the game, you had to...
No. You can still go online and like play it as much as you want. But there was this... You know how like in Smash Bros. You had that like in the single player mode, you had that map. Yeah. You kind of went around.
But that's what I mean. Like that shit to me is criminal. It's like, here's your game, but also here's a little really unethical thing on the side and that you can get involved in. But you want to keep playing it, you got to pay more.
The crazy thing is,
free to play, wasn't it?
It was free to play. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was fucking incredible in beta. I had so much fun, and then they just made the game. Like, how often can you say like the beta was amazing?
And the main game was shit.
Yeah, the main game was shit.
That is true, actually. That's
and another disappointing thing, it's Warner Brothers is, despite like all these greedy business decisions, the sheer amount of IPs they have under their belt is, they're pretty much the only company that could have challenged what is Smash Bros. Because a lot of the draw for Smash Bros. Is we love seeing all our beloved characters come together in one game. No other company except for Warner Brothers can like
bring in so many people,
bring in a roster like that
without having to actually exit their own
exactly IPs, like
stuff. Yeah,
I remember because I was super excited for Multiverse. And I was like, what else can I expect? And going through their list of IPs, it just blew my mind. Like, way more than I thought they had.
Yeah,
it's sad. That's a really good example actually, because if you talk about it being really good in beta, clearly the devs, like the people who make the game, the people who make it look good, the people who make it run good, the people who design it so it's fun to play, every single one of those teams did their job excellently.
Yeah.
And now the game's
been And then it came to the point where, okay, we've got to actually get this out there and sell it. So this other group of greedy people came in and said, okay, we like your game, but we need to throw all these things in to make it a bit more profitable, or way more profitable.
Yeah. It wasn't just the microtransactions that ruined the game.
No, but wasn't the whole the gameplay style and everything like that changed?
Yeah, they made it like slower and a bit floatier, and it felt off. That's
strange.
Yeah.
Like, why imagine your beta version of your game winning Fighting Game of the Year, and you decide to change how it plays. Like, maddening in terms of like the decision making.
Didn't make any fucking sense.
So disappointing. But yeah, it's a big one. And like, you know, I think they've got...
Had good net code, which, I mean, that's...
So rare.
Yes. So rare in platform fighters, because Nintendo just, for some reason, hates online.
But, yeah. You know. Nintendo hates competitive. They just want
to... Yeah, that might be it. That might be it, actually.
They're all about the family
friendly.
Which
I get it. They're trying to, you know, appeal to that certain audience, but like...
I don't get it. I'm just fucking dumb.
It is, but in terms of the popularity that a lot of Nintendo games would have outside, that they go and they make their own tournaments and they're like, no, close it down.
But I think there should be, you know, a competitive option as well. And Nintendo's not going to do it. Somebody's got to do it.
Just don't close it down. Just don't sue Smash players for copyright infringement. That's nuts. They're organizing a tournament off their own dime, have this huge community growing around your game, and it's boosting your image as a company. I don't know why you try and shut that shit down. It's just really weird. It's one of the things Nintendo does.
Oh, are you talking about how they're like, refusing to...
They refuse to...
It's because everyone in the competitive, like, mainly want to play Melee, and that involves that fucking hacked version, which you know how they feel about.
Hacked anything of theirs,
I think that was a problem for a really long time, but beyond that, like, even... I think there's problems just running Smash Ultimate in tournaments. It's weird. They're just a really weird... They seem like a really weird company to deal with that kind of thing. They don't...
It's free advertisement.
It's free advertisement. It's not that...
Exactly what it
is. I'm mad because they won't invest in it more. I'm mad because they shut down things that they've no investment in. Like, it's a thriving community growing their game, free advertisement, and they're really dead set on just crushing it.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't like it. Yeah.
That's the point. But yes, that's WB. So, I mean, what do you think on their statement that they're focusing on there? You know, it's weird to say we're focusing on our main IPs. One of them is DC, but they are closing down the Wonder Woman game. I'm like, that's a strange...
Well, the problem is because Monolith was making a monolithic single-player game, a great game, and they doubled down. Maybe it wasn't included in that article, but they've gone on record saying they're doubling down on their choice to go live service.
Right, okay.
That's their one...
Because that's worked out so well for PlayStation and Sony so far. Like, you know.
Well, it did really well for... I mean... Helldivers is probably why they're just like, you know, we can make this fucking work.
Yeah, but you get Helldivers and you get Concord, and Concord costs them, that studio, their existence, yeah, essentially, in like a couple of tens of millions or whatever.
I think Concord, like... Concord, I don't think it was live service that hurt that. Well, first of all, it should have been free if it was going to be that.
Exactly.
Live service oriented. But there was also... Like, the reason I looked at the game and said, I'm never going to play that, is just the actual, like, aesthetic and design of it. I was just like, this isn't appealing. It had nothing to do with the gameplay. It was just like, this looks like fucking budget Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The whole crew was almost like a weird rip of Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, yeah, pity. We'll wait and see what happens there. I mean, look, I think they were incredibly surprised with how well Hogwarts Legacy did, and that appears to be their focus to bring in a sequel to that. I don't think the next one is going to be as successful as the first one, because
they're going to go live series. That's what they want to do.
Fuck, it's so stupid. It's like,
although when I get thinking about that, like an MMO. Harry Potter.
Don't get me wrong.
That
would be
all right.
But
man,
if it could be done, like, I mean, if you got,
if it
like,
could be done properly, like
a Final Fantasy 14
or a World of Warcraft or something. Yeah. Yeah.
And how often does that happen, though? Like,
yeah.
Almost never. Yeah. Almost never.
Yeah.
And those games are almost guaranteed failure.
Yeah.
So that's it. Let's force it. Bad news there with Monolith. We go to one last story before we finish. State of Play. I won't get into that at all. If you're interested to see what came out in State of Play in February, check out the PlayStation website. There's a couple in there. I will mention one game on that before I actually move on to our last story today that I was really keen on. The State of Play ended with a section where they showed three or four games. One of them was called Tides of Annihilation. But interesting enough, all these like last four games had a... this was captured on PlayStation 5 Pro. So I'm like, hey, finally, you know, we're getting some pro things or whatever.
Yeah, but that's, we just saw what happens with, like, you release games for PlayStation 5 Pro and then, like, PS5 are getting the snickle fritz.
Just go there and get a PS5 Pro, you know. Yeah, Very easy for me to say. But one of the ones was Tides of Annihilation, which looks like an unbelievable game. It's like a mix of Final Fantasy 16 with Devil May Cry and all that kind of stuff, but it looks...
Is that the one where he's like kind of running on like the little black thing? And then
no,
like,
that one's another one. That one was...
That one looked pretty cool. There was a lot of like super like Japanese kind of Devil May Cry looking games.
Lost Soul aside is the one. Yeah. So that one, Hell Is Us and the Tides of Annihilation look class. Hell Is Us is one where I don't think you are told anything. It's like one of the things where you play as this character with his stuff, but you're not given any sort of tutorial and you have to figure out what exactly is going on yourself as a player, which I'd be keen on.
Dark Souls.
Yeah, probably not as hard. Probably not as hard. But I'll go into our last story for today.
Thing I was really surprised is no Ghost of Yotai. Like, I was shocked.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, no Ghost of Yotai information at all. I would say that we'll probably get it. They said Borderlands 4 is getting its own State of Play, I think, sometime. So I wonder, will they have a State of Play after that, which will probably highlight Ghost of Yotai? Because it is meant to come out this year, isn't it?
I think so, yep.
We really only saw it like announced once, and there hasn't been much information on it.
No, there's only been the one trailer, I think, yeah.
Cinematic trailer as well, so.
Yeah. So
I'm
not sure. This one is kind of for you, Chris. This comes from the Video Game Chronicle by Jordan Midler. It's about From Software in the past being wary to work with Sony. This is just interesting because there was...
They fucking hang on to their best IPs. And God, it's like holding them hostage.
So Demon's Souls was developed by From Software in collaboration with Sony Japan Studio. During the game's development, it was planned that the game would be published globally by Sony, but it didn't come to be. Although these days Demon's Souls is considered the first entry in From Software's popular Souls-like series of games, it is said at the time that Sony couldn't see the game's global appeal. Due to the game's high difficulty and negative early play tests, Sony decided not to localize Demon's Souls for an English-language release. Instead, the US game was published by Atlus, and in Europe, publishing was handled by Bandai Namco. Speaking to the Sacred Symbols podcast, former SIE president Yoshida explained that Sony wanted to work on the sequel to Demon's Souls with From Software, but the developer turned it down and instead decided to work at Bandai Namco on what would become Dark Souls. Quote, From Software
fucking
was already...
love From Software.
Yeah.
Fucking love them.
Quote, From Software was already working on the sequel, but they were so disappointed with how PlayStation treated them, we wanted to work with them again, but they passed on it, Yoshida claimed. Sony would eventually work with From Software again some years later with the PS4 exclusive Bloodborne, something Yoshida said he was happy to see. Quote, we have huge respect for Miyazaki and we were able to work with him again, he said. Bloodborne is one of his best games. An interview with Game Informer back in 2012, Yoshida gave more detail on Sony's decision not to localize Demon's Souls for the West, admitting that it didn't get the appeal at first. Quote, from my personal experience with Demon's Souls when it was close to final, I spent close to 2 hours playing it, and after 2 hours, I was still standing at the beginning of the game, he recalled at the time. I said, this is crap. This is an unbelievably bad game. So I put it aside.
Get good, you filthy
cannibal. Hell yeah. He finishes with, luckily third-party publishers Atlas in North America and Namco in Europe stepped in, and it really became a great hit outside of Japan. We definitely dropped the ball from a publishing standpoint, including studio management side. We were not able to see the value of a product we were making, end quote. I just thought that was a funny story to put in that I came across.
Yeah, it just makes me love that company even more. It is weird that they kind of didn't like Sony, but they still made Bloodborne
exclusive.
And then got bit again because...
Yeah,
get that on a platform other than PS4. It's not. It doesn't exist.
I just talk about companies wanting to make money. Like Sony clearly doesn't like money.
Right. Put it out on everything.
Or just remaster it again. Put it out on PS5 Pro. It's going to sell fucking millions.
I think they're just sitting on that like a trump card. It's one of their things that they know they can just cash in and be like, Bloodborne's back, and it's pretty.
Yeah.
On that question to finish off our news episode, speaking of things coming back, if there was any game from old generations of video games, Luke or Chris, what would you like to see come back?
Oh, man, I would love to see them fucking do anything with Mega Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's another game. Just nothing's happening. I'm trying to think what else, like old games aren't being made anymore.
Yeah, like remasters just to bring back to the modern day. Improved graphics, improved gameplay mechanics, or how the game plays.
Bloodborne, like, if it was part of that choice is we also get it on other consoles. Bloodborne is definitely, like, probably number one on that list, to be honest. Mm. But, I mean, if it comes to PlayStation, it's useless to me anyways.
Yeah. Fair. I think for me personally, no surprises to people, Kingdom Hearts 1. And then Kingdom Hearts 2 and everything in between, all the way up to where we are today in modern
day. Yeah, I guess like I would want Kingdom Hearts 2 more, but I guess you couldn't do 2 without 1.
Yeah, I think you know, 3 looked decent enough when I played it on PS4, Unreal's 4 engine. I just don't think maybe in its development they did as well as they possibly could have. But 1 and 2, I'd love to see get the modern touch up with modern day gameplay things. It's the one thing I that disappoints me with Bluepoint. I used to ask the question, if Bluepoint was remastering a game, which game would you pick? But the problem with Bluepoint is that they just touch how it looks up, whereas the gameplay is the exact same.
Well, that's exactly what I want for most of my games. I want it to play the exact same.
So my only disappointment with that was Shadow of the Colossus came out, and it was an unbelievably beautiful looking remake, but it was still clunky as fuck at times, and I was like, this is hard to like see it like this, and yet it plays like this, like, you know, as a hard mix. Didn't mean to put you on the spot, Luke, but you got any answers? You don't, no pressure if you don't.
No, I think this is one of those questions I'll come up with a banger answer later on and be like, oh, why didn't I say that?
I actually just thought of a couple more sitting here. Is speaking of Dark or From Software, the Kingsfield series, which is the predecessor to the Souls. I never played them, but like...
You'd love to have an opportunity to play them?
Yeah, yeah. And just the exact same way. Maybe just visually better because they're dated. But I'd want it to still play the same. And then the other one I typically answer to whenever this comes up is Blades of Steel. I just want that.
I got an answer. Earthbound.
Nice, a modern kind of looking Earthbound.
But they'd have to do it right, obviously. But yeah. Earthbound. That'd be so good.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
Well, Tim, in the post show, we've got some more news for our listeners. If anyone's interested, we're going to talk about that Nemesis patent that Warner Brothers took out on Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War. And we're also going to look at what the Nintendo and the Switch 2 are doing to possibly stop scalpers from ruining the fun for everybody. If you like that, check out patreon.com/thegiftofgaming. But until then, Luke, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Darren.
Chris, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Don't you lie to me.
And to our listeners.
Self-burn.
To our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.